Thank you for the Dad Rock playlist. Many a guilty pleasure. It's not guilty if it's a pleasure. No one should be judging you on your musical choices. We all, when we're left to our own devices, will listen to things that maybe aren't as cool as we profess in our public side. So just embrace it. Roll with it.
Hello, and this is not a joke. It's the AV Forums Hi-Fi Podcast on the 1st of April. Hello. Thank you for joining us. On this edition, we've had to move things around slightly because we've had internet issues. So sadly, John was supposed to join us this week. Apologies to John. His internet was too bad, and it's a shame that he's not joining us. But we do have a special guest on the podcast today, Mr. Simon Powell from Henley Audio. Good afternoon, Simon.
Hi, guys.
Welcome to the podcast. Thank you very much, sir, for joining us. And of course, as always, our hi-fi editor, Ed Selly, is also here. Good afternoon, Ed.
Hi, Phil.
We've got lots to get through. I'm just briefly going to mention some of the things that we're going to talk about. So we're briefly going to touch on the fact that we have an open house coming up at Peter Tyson's for all you AV Forums members. It's a non-sales event. It's basically go along, spend an hour or two listening to some hi-fi that you probably never thought you'd be able to hear or witness. So we'll tell you a little bit about that. Burrs & Wilkins also launched a new speaker. We'll quickly touch on that one because Ed was at an event and was able to listen to those. So we'll get a quick input from Ed on that one. And then we're going to talk about everything you need to know about turntables. That's everything you need to know. Not everything about turntables, but everything that you need to know. We're going to go through that today. And that is our podcast. Now, we're no longer live streaming. These are pre-recorded. So if you do want to get in touch with us and you want to leave a message or questions or whatever, you can do that the old-fashioned way by email, podcast@avforums.com. Or, of course, go to avforums.com, go to the forum list. All the way down the bottom, you'll see the AV Forums podcast forum. Just jump in there and ask your question on the relevant podcast. We'll collate that and ask that question. Of course, if you are watching on YouTube, comment section down below, and Andy will collate those questions and comments and feedback as well, and we'll answer those in the next podcast. And of course, if you're new to the podcast, we are AV Forums. We're one of the largest AV and hi-fi communities on the planet and certainly on the internet. We started in 2000, the editorial started in 2003, and we create content for you guys. So there's no bias here. It's completely honest, open. We just want to give you the best information possible and share our experience and knowledge because we've been around a little while, certainly most of us on this podcast in this industry. So just to introduce myself, I'm Phil Hinton. I'm the editor of the site. I have been for 20 years, experienced TV and AV reviewer, a calibrator, certified by ISF, THX, PVA, and I produce the vast majority of the video reviews and TV reviews and also the videos on YouTube channel. We also have Ed, our hi-fi editor. Very briefly, Ed, just introduce yourself for everybody.
Yes. Well, I am Ed Selly. That's me. Hi-fi editor for AV Forums. Unlike Phil, I'm not exclusively employed by AV Forums, so you will find my work elsewhere. But I've been working for AV Forums now for over 10 years in initially a hi-fi and AV capacity, but now almost exclusively two-channel. And I've been a forum member for a slightly tragic 21 years, which is, you know, a bit of a shocker when you say it out loud. I cover a variety of items. Hi-fi is a broad church, so it's everything from true wireless earphones, we've got a set of those in the next set of review products, all the way through to some very significant setups indeed. Trying to find the balance, always open to suggestions about what we should be looking at, and always interested to see your feedback on things that we do look at. And the feedback doesn't have to be positive. there was a bit of confusion about this earlier in the week. If you wish to tell me that what I'm doing is a complete and utter waste of time, you are entitled to your opinion and you can make it known. So that's me, that's what I do, and that's how I do it.
Excellent. And of course, we've got a special guest, Simon. Simon, just give us a brief update, a roundup of what you do and what you're responsible and so on.
Yeah, sure. So I'm Simon. I'm operations director at Henley Audio. I've been with the company for about 20 years. The reason why we're invited today is because we're the longstanding importers of Project Audio Systems. But our approach to hi-fi is to be fair, fairly similar to Ed's. We offer a broad range of products and brands that we distribute pretty much exclusively, which involves importing them into the country and then offering full turnkey solutions. So we're frequently in touch with AV Forums as well as other media outlets. We and our, I would say our core speciality is probably in middle hi-fi, which means that we touch all areas. So we work with big partners such as John Lewis, Richard Sounds. We're in some really nice specialist retailers like Harrods and John Lewis and Selfridges with certain brands. And then our core has always been working with the specialist retailers up and down the country, including the likes of Peter Tyson's, who you mentioned earlier.
It's worth saying that your relationship with Project, it's one of the longest distribution agreements in UK audio. And it's quite two-way as well, isn't it? You don't just get sent stuff. You feedback quite heavily on it.
No, that's absolutely right. So the reason why I say a turnkey approach is we effectively try to act like the daughter company for all of the companies that we work with. But Project, we've been working with before we were even Henley Audio. So Henley Audio was born out of a company called Autophon UK, which was the daughter company for Autophon, which is still one of our brands today. So Project was formed in 91, and we began working with them in 92. I think we are now officially the longest standing distributor. It's a bit neck and neck with the Germans. But over that time, the history of sort of great models like the Debut has a very strong English sort of lineage running through it. We take great pride in that brand.
Excellent. Well, welcome along to the podcast. Obviously, we're going to get stuck into hi-fi. That's the whole point of the podcast, and we'll get some of your knowledge and input as we go ahead. But first of all, we've got current competitions. These are open to AV Forums members. So you can win a pair of KEF LSX2 LT wireless speakers worth £899. That competition closes on the 25th of April, so be quick, go and enter that one. You can also win a pair of Q-Acoustics M40 speakers worth £749, courtesy of Peter Tyson's. That closes in a few hours' time. So if you're watching this,
get going
because it closes tonight if you're watching on Monday when the podcast goes live. And it goes live at 7 o'clock. So get on it because you've got to 11:59 p.m. To get into that one. And all competitions are open to eligible AV Forum members over 18-year-old and who are residents of the UK. So basically anybody in the UK apart from me can enter the competitions. So it's avforums.com/competitions. Disc competitions as well. So if you still want to support physical media and you still watch on disc, there are quite a range of DVD, Blu-ray and 4K discs available for patrons and standard AV Forums members. So head over to the competitions page. Lots for you to enter there. One previous winner to tell you about, Ian 50G won the Teak AI 303 audio amplifier worth £800. Well done to you. And we also got a couple of new patrons and a buy a coffee. So new patrons, yours, Callum Smith, Angus and Anthony White. Welcome, guys. Thank you very much for your support. It's always great to have patrons with us because you guys support us long term. It really is appreciated. Thank you for your support. And Matt Evans bought us a coffee. So thank you for that, Matt. We'll share it amongst us as the podcast goes on. Thank you very much for that. So we move over to the Q&A feedback from the last Hi-Fi podcast, which was the 4th of March. It was the Building a Hi-Fi System in 2024 edition. S. Ed, first questions from you from T-Force.
Yeah, this is referencing a system that was part of the Bristol Show Report. I would love to have the Harbeth reviewed as my mad Christmas monster. That's not a euphemism. I do genuinely try and go out my way to review something a bit spectacular that goes live on Christmas Day. Harbeth has taken their, you know, conventionally shaped loudspeakers and they built a £42,000 DSP-controlled, actively driven monster system. Absolutely spectacular bit of kit. I will take that suggestion on board because I think it could be genuinely interesting, but there's ever so many things in competition for it and the year is barely not even a third of the way through, so we'll see what goes for that. But yes, could be well up for that. Yes, also thank you for the Dad Rock playlist. Many a guilty pleasure. It's not guilty if it's a pleasure. No one should be judging you on your musical choices. We all, when we're left to our own devices, we'll listen to things that maybe aren't as cool as we profess in our public side. So just embrace it, roll with it.
Toon Army, he also said, thanks, gents, and great that you reinforced the value of visiting your local hi-fi dealer. We always do that. If you can get out and listen to this kit, the only thing I would say is if you are going to go to a hi-fi dealer, and spend their time listening to systems and so on, and you find something that you like and you think you're going to purchase it, then please purchase it with that dealer. Don't then go online and try and find it for the cheapest possible price and buy it online, and having wasted that dealer's time. It's not a charity. If you're going to use dealers, They're worth their weight in gold. And the thing is, if you build up a good relationship with the dealer, and I hope this answers your question, Tunami, that can be a relationship that lasts for a lifetime. If they're a good dealer and you get on well with them and you buy different bits of kit. And once you've got that relationship, and I had that relationship with numerous dealers when I didn't do this for a job. And once I got to know dealers, they were quite happy for me to borrow kit and take it home and try it out. And once you get that kind of relationship going, it makes the buying experience a lot better. So, and Tunami says a 30-minute conversation with a dealer is worth days of internet research at times. And absolutely, a lot of these guys that work in the dealerships, especially the specialist dealers, Simon, I know you'll agree with this, they're enthusiasts at the end of the day. They love the subject. Yes, they're selling you kit, but they're enthusiasts and they love it.
And they're selling from passion as well. Yeah. It's that they're spending all of their time with it. They know what they're talking about. Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that sentiment.
Excellent. And just as a side note, he also mentions Tidal changing the price structure now. So Lossless is now available. And I think that's a great step.
It's a big deal for them. They were looking decidedly costly compared to key rivals. They needed to do it. They've acted decisively and they've done it in the right way. So I still stand by my start of the year prediction that we are going to lose an audio streaming service this year. Make of that what you will, but no, this is definitely the thing that they needed to be doing, and I'm really pleased to see that they've done it.
Yeah, I mean, the surprising thing for me is that Spotify have yet to do their lossless hi-fi tier. Is it gonna come, or do
I
you
don't
think
know
we're just
I genuinely them? At this point, all bets are off. I do know that their business model, they've really honed the multiple account thing, adding the duo for, if you're you don't have children, and then the six account family things. I mean, all the streaming services are pushing it, but Spotify pushes it hardest and gives you the most accounts, I think, for the least sum of money. And it still works extraordinarily well. I mean, I have active subscriptions to multiple streaming services, but I still pay for Spotify. So I don't know if it's a viable business model long term. They are up against two companies which have no prospect of going bust, and one of which has their own space program. So I don't know how it's going to work long term, but they're doing the best.
Okay.
So yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. So Martin had a question as well, but Martin's question leads into what we're going to talk about later on in the podcast. So we're going to come back to Martin's question. Just remind me to go back to Martin's question, but we'll do that because it does lead nicely into our main subject. But before we do that, like I teased right at the start, Peter Tyson are holding a hi-fi open house in Newcastle. So in the Northeast, it's a rare beast having a dealer up here that can open the doors and invite everybody along. So take advantage of it if you're an AV Forums member. It's going to be on the 27th and 28th of April at their Newcastle branch. Fantastic facilities there. I was blown away last time I was along there. I didn't actually realise they had the full upstairs. I thought they were just a little shop unit. And some of the demo suites they have there, some of the kit that the guys have on permanent demo there. I mean, you're talking Bowers & Wilkins 800 D4s, you're talking Name and Focal and Lin, and we're talking serious money when it comes to Lin. So if you're into your hi-fi, this is an opportunity for you to go along. There's a number of dealers, a number of manufacturers helping out on the day. You will be able to mix and match product. You'll be able to ask for demos of different things. Providing it's not packed out, you'll be able to basically have a great time listening to systems. So that's 27th, 28th April. Look out on the forums. We'll have more details coming up. So look out for the thread on the forums. It's a non-pressured sales thing. It's go along and experience some of this hi-fi and listen to some systems that perhaps you don't get an opportunity. And again, it reinforces the message that we just gave a couple of minutes ago. There's some cracking dealers out there, some real enthusiasts, and give you an opportunity to listen to some excellent kit and give you a path on your hi-fi buying passion. Once you hear things and you get an idea of how things work, it gives you an idea of where you might want your system to go. Because Ed, we don't buy your system overnight. You don't go out and just buy a system. It's something that over many years you're going to progressively build over the years.
They evolve fundamentally. And if you choose the right dealer to start with, they will help you evolve it in a way that, by and large, unless you do drunken purchasing, and we have all been there, you should avoid too many blind alleys where you end up going, this was a great idea on paper, but an absolute mistake in reality, and you go back to where you were. So this is another thing that dealers will help you do. Whatever you might think about, I found it for 30 quid cheaper online, they could end up saving you thousands in terms of making a mistake, because what looks great on paper might not actually work anything like as well in reality. So yes, ideal.
Yeah, excellent. Right, so before we get onto turntables, we're just going to quickly speak speakers, because signature speakers are always worth talking about, Ed. Bowers & Wilkins, they launched the 800s not that long ago, actually. And we're now joined by the 700 S3 signatures, which I quickly had a look at the photographs. They do look nice. Do they sound any good?
Yes, they do. This now seems to be more of a regular thing. One interesting snippet that came out, because I thought this might have been asked, but it hasn't been, but I can put this both in the review and in the podcast. Signature products, every single Bowers & Wilkins signature product is one that has its tweeter in a pod, their tweeter on top thing. So if you were thinking, oh, they've done the 600s, is there going to be a 600 signature? No, there isn't. Simply because the mechanics of the design doesn't permit it. As far as Bowers is concerned, you can only have a signature product if it's got tweeter on top. So that being the case, the 700 models, it's the two models that have that facility, like it was the last time we reviewed 700 series signature. So 702 and 705, as with all Bowers ranges, the smaller the number, the bigger the speaker. You know, just why not? So 705 is the two-way stand mount, tweeter on top, as noted. It is 3,400, which is £800 more than the cooking one. The signature models, and we covered this on the reviews that we've done, it's broadly speaking, it's just tweaking. They don't mechanically change a huge amount of what the speaker does, but where possible, if there's components from the 800 series that work, there's a really odd little tweak that they've done to the crossover, which is not necessarily a cost increase. It's just borne out on experience from the units in the field. They've changed how the crossover is routed for the signature, and I'd actually be interested to see if they ended up doing that as a line change. But they've done things like that, and then, as you note, they've put them in two custom finishes. Now, we've seen both of these finishes before, but not in the same place. So the blue is the same blue that was on the 800 signatures.
Ed, just a quick question, because on the 800s, it's a beautiful finish. I know it gets something like 11 coats and then 11 coats of lacquer and it's polished. Yeah. And do they got the same lengths with the 700, or is it a little bit less?
No. It's the same process. They are obviously compelled to point out that the 800s are done in the UK, the 700s are done in China, but it's the same paint, same lacquer, same process. And they did actually have a pair of 805 signatures, which you could put next to the 705. It is the same color. Now, because the 800's got the curve and the 700's got corners, it doesn't catch the light in quite the same way. Perhaps unavoidably, it doesn't look quite as spectacular on a square speaker as it does on something with a compound curve. But it does look pretty decent. Where the 700 arguably has an advantage over the 800 is that it has the same datuk, I'm not 100% sure, gloss ebony finish that was on the original, previous generation 700 signatures. And this is, there's no point mincing word, it's an order of magnitude nicer than the burl walnut that's on the 800 signatures, which looks like an 80s car dashboard. I'm not 100% convinced by that. The Datuk Ebony, it's a very, very, very nice finish. It looks extremely good. On the bigger 702 especially, it looks absolutely brilliant. 702 is £7,000, so it's £1,000 more than the standard 702. Lots of changes to the crossover on this one. Quite a significant set of revisions and quite a number of bits taken from 800 series, which, there's some essentially in being able to use more of them, they've used economies of scale to get more bits in there. And of the two, it was the one where we had the opportunity to listen to the standard model, then signatures straight after. Now, on the understanding that we were using two Rotel amplifiers the size of a studio flat each, there was a definite step forward with the 705, but the 702, it's like, crikey. Especially when, they didn't tell us the price of the 702 until a bit later on in the thing. I had it pegged at about 8 or 9. I don't see any point being being coy about this. I thought it was more expensive than it was. So for that reason, I've secured the 702 sample as the one that we're going to look at first for AVF, because I think it's the most interesting of the two. But they are both available now. And there's important AV news, Phil. I know it's a hi-fi podcast, but there's AV news.
Yeah.
Because the 700 series range has a center speaker with tweeter on top, there's a signature center speaker as well.
Excellent.
So all of the people that were very, very cross about the 700 series last time, I hope you all to a person go out and buy this one because they've done what you asked them to. I mean, you know, no pressure or anything. Just make sure that you do. Yeah, so hopefully all things going according to plan, we're going to look at the 702 first, and then we will, I'm sure that Phil, myself, and the good people at Burrs and Wilkins, we can hopefully get the AV system looked at as well, because I think that there's a compelling story to be had there for both parties. But note, there are literally available imminently, and we'll be looking to review them. Well, hopefully goes through in my April block of reviews. And excellent. If I'm feeling brave and determined, it'll probably be one where we run some video for it as well.
Excellent. Good stuff. Right. So let's move on to our big subject, the one that we're really pushing this week, which is turntables. So I'm going to pop back to Martin's question from the last podcast. And he said, great podcast. Nice change from the endless TV talk. Not sure what he means by that. Interesting that Ed Selly, you're saying that if you haven't got any records, then don't get into vinyl. Well, I did last year, huge investment in kit, and I'm finding lots of secondhand vinyl with artists that I knew about but didn't listen to much. How's that changed, and how that's changed, and it's opened up a whole new world of listening. Yes, vinyl is expensive, but it takes away from the endless skipping tracks and makes you actually listen. And this is a thing I mentioned as well. You know, I wanted a turntable in my system. I'm going to have a turntable in my system once I finally get a system together. For that reason, Ed, I listen to music every day, 365 days a year, because I've always got something on in the background. If I'm sitting here, I've got a couple of Genelecs, I've got something playing on them if I'm writing or whatever. If I'm round about the house, we've got a number of wireless speakers that we use for background music. But if I want to listen to music, it's making the time to sit down and actually listen. And I think for me personally, and I don't know if it works for you guys, vinyl is certainly the format for that, because you have to physically get off your arse and turn it over for the other side. And you have to make a point of sitting and listening to it. Am I right?
Yeah, there's definitely something in that. The advantage is, of course, that there is faff involved in changing anything. And as we are, as human beings, generally speaking, allergic to faff, unless we have to, it simply removes the temptation. I need, you know, before someone chimes in the comments, it's perfectly possible to get this level of captivation through a digital source. And there's many, many excellent manufacturers doing that. And if you exercise a bit of discipline, or, you know, even if it's as simple as continuing to listen to CD, you can replicate some of that. But yes, the fundamental issue that if you wander away from it for too long, it stops playing, and, you know, requires you to physically interact with it to change anything. It just makes for a different listening experience. And are you going to vigorously disagree with that, Simon? I suspect probably not.
Oh, God, no. I think there are multiple factors that drive interest in vinyl in this market, because you're absolutely right, Phil. We can listen to music all day long. I mean, you know, we also represent brands like Weem, which is a wonderful brand right now, and makes streaming music accessible in a high quality way, better than we've ever really had access to before. But there's a theater and a process that goes on with playing a record, and it's that physical act of selecting it, taking it out of the sleeve, putting it on, that commits time, that focuses energy in that area, and it's a beautiful way of sitting and listening. It's the, I guess an analogy would be having the TV on in the background, or sitting down and watching a film with the full AVR and everything on. That's it. We don't need it all the time necessarily, and it's not convenient for us all the time necessarily. But it has its place for those who want it.
Yeah. So let's answer the other question that Martin had there, and the other point that he raised. So for him, he was quite happy to start with vinyl from scratch in this day and age. But Ed, we have discussed this previously. I mean, I have some vinyl which will get played, but I don't have a huge library that I used to have, because I sold it all many, many moons ago. Silly me. So is it too expensive now? Is there this barrier to people who want to get into vinyl now? Because I had to look around HMV the other day. I know it's not the best place to be looking because it's a high street retailer with higher prices, but you're talking 25 quid an album
Yeah.
for the cheaper stuff. So, that's quite a lot of money for a bit of vinyl.
It comes down as anything with so many parts of life. It is going to come down to what your levels of disposable income are and how much you feel you want to commit to this. I stand by what I said. I do think that starting from scratch now, especially, and I suppose the other caveat is if you're starting from scratch now and you are younger than 30, I mean, I'm increasingly old for my sins. There's a plenty of music that I remember from being a kid, which exists in significant quantities on vinyl. And if I want to buy that, yes, it can be. You can buy, pick up decent copies of that in good condition for not a lot of money. From the late 90s and up, it's not as simple as that. It is an expensive undertaking, especially with new release. And to say nothing, if you want something that was, pressed between 2001 and 2008, sell a car, basically. Some of it is horrendously expensive. It's going to come down to how much you can prioritize it and how much you want to prioritize it. I'm delighted for Martin. I think it's a heartening story. I mean, Simon, have you guys, I mean, obviously you don't really sell direct. You don't see all of the sales data, but I mean, do you see it starting to sort of stratify that there are people already in the club who are staying in the club, and there's a slight decrease to the number of people joining the club?
I mean, my current experience is no, I don't really think that's slowing. I think it's more connected to the first question that you asked, Phil. And I think it's about, so a lot of people get into it because there's an artist that they like and they want to invest in that artist. And increasingly, there are special records that get produced, coloured versions, limited edition runs, signed versions, whatever. And so they may be invested in that way. And I think the question that's increasingly coming up is about longevity of your investment, buying something that can last a longer period of time. And so I think the people are willing, in proportion to the increased price of vinyl, to invest in a higher level of turntable early doors. And their collection might only be 10 records at first. And then by the end of year one, it's 20 records because they're still getting all of that music access through their streaming. So they're not totally cut off. I think it's wrong to think that your collection, your vinyl collection, has to be as big as your album's collection in Tidal. The two will be disparate. And so I think that actually, as the quality of pressings improves and the level of new artists that are putting out content that's interesting to people improves, and then lots of manufacturers are producing turntables of a good standard for not crazy prices right now, I think that we have pretty good access to people who want to start up. And I think it's a misnomer to think that it's just going to be expensive straight away. Of course, if you want a collection of 200 or 300 records straight away, then yeah, remortgage. But in terms of going on a journey with it, which I think we'll touch on more as we talk about the actual product, because it's a product that you can go on a journey with. I think that I don't really feel it slowing down right now at our introductory end.
I think for me, coming from the angle that I'm coming from, there's a love for vinyl that goes back to my childhood, which Ed obviously had as well, and yourself, Simon, you'll remember the days where your record was what you went to Woolies and bought the latest album or whatever. That's going back some, but for me, it again, it's this sit down and actually take it in experience that I think appeals to people because, like Ed said, it's not as easy as just flicking your phone and pressing a button and finding what you want. It's actually, and you want to experience that. So I guess what you're saying there is it's a bit like, they're finding their favorite artist. They're going to find what they actually want to sit and listen to and find it on vinyl rather than on a streaming service and actually create an experience of listening to that.
I mean, to be
Exactly
fair.
that. Exactly that. My Tidal playlist does not correlate with my record collection directly.
Yeah.
There are things that I want to listen to in that environment, in that way, ambient, whatever. And then there are things that I think I want to sit down and I listen to, and those things I prioritize on vinyl.
And they do have a symbiotic relationship. Of course, you can avoid what I've long referred to as the Babylon Zoo effect, in so much as you can, at the very least, listen to the whole thing on a streaming service before you drop the cash and realize that you've bought a complete turkey. So, you know, these are good times for that. So, yes.
So there's turntables, and then there's turntables, and then there's turntables. So let's get the elephant out of the room, first of all. That is the £100 and less record players that look like suitcases and other items that are being sold from some retailers on the high street. I guess our advice, I mean, I'm guessing here, but I guess our advice is avoid those because they are going to destroy your vinyl that you've just spent a lot of money and a lot of time collecting. So Ed, where's our entry point, and what are the things that we, as a new turntable user, should really be looking for in terms of how much we spend and what are the important things?
I'm staggered at how little minimum spend for acceptable performance actually is. Simon alluded to this earlier. I mean, Project's been one of the big forces in this, but they're being kept honest by an army of other competition at this sort of price point. And it's still possible to buy, you know, record players that will not, that I would happily entrust my record collection to for not a lot more than £200. Especially, and to be clear, in terms of additional equipment that you'd need to that, many of these, we'll cover what Phonostages are in a bit, but many of them will simply work via a bog standard patch cable into the back of the analog input that sits there forlornly on the back of your wireless speaker. That's it. And that's all that they need. I mean, even more bizarrely than that, I mean, I did a recent review of that Audio-Technica Soundburger because it fascinated me. It tracks a little bit heavier than perhaps I would want to play my most treasured possessions on, but I was impressed at how light it actually was. So yeah, I do genuinely believe that £200-£250 is going to get you something which is nice to look at, easy to use, easy to set up, will communicate with just about anything, and absolutely critically will not impinge on the quality of the records that you have invested your hard earned into. So that's where I think I'd start going. I mean, Simon, do you reckon that's about right?
Yeah, I think it's because the value of vinyl is going up and we have better expectations of how it should sound, I think that it's a little bit higher than where we were in the past, perhaps, in the last few years. But I don't think that's a bad thing, because I see it coming across with better material choices and more and more connection options as well. So yeah, I would perhaps put it a tiny bit north of that, perhaps near to 300 maybe. But look, we still have the Project Primary on the market, and that is a phenomenal piece of equipment for £200. So I think that's right at your entry point.
Right, so we've kind of got a budget there. So you know, it's not unreasonable, 200, 300 quid entry point. What are the important things, though, that people should be thinking about when it comes to purchasing a turntable? Is it the cartridge? Is it the needle? Is it the way they can connect it to the system? What is it that they should really be thinking about?
Well, in an absolute basic sense, the output from a record player is absolutely pathetic. We could just say a CD player, remember those? They generally speaking give you 2 volts of output. An affordable record player with a moving magnet cartridge will, on a good day, get you to 0.5.
5 millivolts, something
millivolts,
like that.
Yeah. I mean, they're outperformed comfortably by a potato in terms of electrical generation. So, and to be very clear, this isn't an abstract thing. I alluded to this in the review I did of that Technics. The only part of a record player where power is involved is spinning it round. The entire business of getting a signal out of the groove, down the arm, and off to something else is an entirely passive thing. It's generated by the movement of that tiny stylus. So, Phonostages, you'll see, they're mentioned in almost all the reviews I do, and they've mentioned all over the place. All it is like a gain stage. It turns that absolutely pathetic output into something that an amplifier can actually do something with. Now, these exist as a category in their own right. They go from £25 to £25,000 and up. I mean, like everything in hi-fi, if you want to spend that much money, someone's going to build it for you. But if you to get started don't necessarily have one of these, and you know you're not 100% sure about it, a very significant number of starter turntables have their phono stage built into the back of it. It's powered off the same tap that's busy powering the motor to spin it round, and they will present an output to an amplifier or a wireless speaker or whatever that is, broadly speaking, commensurate with plugging in a digital source. It'll be a little bit lower, but it'll behave in the same way. You don't need anything additional to that. So your first thing before you start working out how it's going to spin round or anything like that is, do I have a phono stage? If not, do I want one to be separate, or do I want it to be part of the turntable? And a number of my fellow reviewers have got an absolute downer on phono stages being built into turntables. And I really don't understand this. There's no mechanical disadvantage to doing it. They're quite sensitive things, but the back of a record player is less of a challenging environment to build one in than the inside of an amplifier. So, you know, don't feel that you're taking a cheap option here. Choose where you need your phono stage to be and make sure that you've got one. Once we've got that, we can start looking about the turntable to which it is attached. If we're doing starter stuff at this price point, my recommendation is that, well, almost everything is going to be a belt driven design anyway. The platter is going to be rotated by a large belt, or indeed actually in some cases a relatively small belt, which is acting from a motor and sending rotational force to the platter. We recently did the Technics SL1200 GR2. That has a motor that acts directly on the platter called direct drive. You don't have to spend as much as the Technics to find devices with direct drive, but they are, generally speaking, a little bit more expensive. And really affordable direct drive models can be fractionally, they can send a bit of noise up to that playing surface that we were talking about. So I'm sure that someone points out in the comments that there can be significantly more pitch stable. And this, in an absolute engineering sense, is potentially true, although belt drive isn't shabby these days. If you are doing this in a cost-effective way, I'd go with belt, unless you are a budding DJ, as you used to be, Phil. Direct drive, then very, very useful because it will stand up to a significant amount more abuse. But I don't believe we're talking about this in a DJ sense. So those are your two basic starting points.
Okay. Simon, you want to add anything to what Ed said there?
No, I think I think he's making the right points. I think the only thing that I'd say is that with the phono stage, I think, like with everything that we'll touch on, it's always interesting to A/B these things as you then get into the hobby and go further. You're absolutely right. Our affordable turntables, we always have a built-in phono stage option, and we always have a non-built-in phono stage option because we have a range of about 16 different phono stages ranging from 40 quid to about a grand, something like that. And it's always an interesting thing to tell somebody, or to let somebody who's new to turntables, who set up their system and is looking for a new next step, the two things that we look at first are cartridge upgrades and phono stage upgrades. And phono stage is always the surprising one for them, because the only other thing that Ed, you didn't specifically mention there was about the RIAA curve.
Yeah,
as well, that happens in that process, because if you put your ear to a record that's playing and has the cartridge on but no amplification or anything, you'll hear it, but it'll always be tinny. And it's because these things are pressed without all of the bass in there. And what happens in the phono stage is the RIAA curve does an inverse of that bass removal to bring it back in. And so the accuracy of that curve can have an effect on the overall sound. And indeed, as you get into more expensive phono stages, you might even see alternative curves like Decca and Columbia curves as well. So the phono stage, particularly when you're a little bit further in the journey, is a really interesting thing to spend more time on, and is often overlooked.
They have annoyingly large amounts of character. They sound they annoyingly different.
They do.
There's no getting around that.
So just for the beginner, I want to just quickly dial back a little bit here, because Ed mentioned moving magnet cartridge. People might not understand what the differences are there, what a moving magnet is, and what differences there are in cartridges. So, Simon, why don't you quickly take us through a 101 in terms of cartridges and needles and how they work?
Yeah, okay, cool. So if we keep it at its most simple form, we effectively have moving magnets and moving coils. They work in the same way in their core structure, but there are intricate differences that change the way they generate their signal. Effectively, a cartridge is made up of a diamond or the actual tip that rides in the record groove. We use diamond at Audifon, and most do. Then you mount it to a cantilever. That cantilever goes into a generator system, and the generator system is either a moving magnet, in which case a magnet is on the end of that cantilever and moves between coils on either side of the body to generate the electrical impulse that we then hear as music. That's the most common form and the most affordable way of producing cartridges. The alternative is a moving coil. And a moving coil involves the same parts, but just literally flipped the other way around. So the armature, the cantilever, as it goes into the generator system, has some coil windings around it, and they move within the field of a magnet. Generally, moving coils have significantly lower output than a moving magnet. We do have some high output MCs that get about there, but a typical moving coil will have a much, much lower output. So again, if we talk about the need of a phonostage, it's even more important, the phonostage that we choose there. And they are typically, depending on the manufacturer and depending on the price, but they'll typically have more hand assembly that goes into them. So they'll often be hand wound and things like that. So they take more time. They're typically more costly. And then because they're taking more time and they're more costly to produce, they're typically, we reserve the finer technologies for them. So for example, if we go right up to the Audifon flagship, we're talking about a very impressive diamond profile. Then we talk about a diamond cantilever. And then we talk about titanium SLM manufacturing in the body, and some very clever technologies in the generator system. We have more budget, so we have more time, so more goes in. So typically moving magnet at the beginning and moving coil the higher up the journey. Moving magnet also have the further benefit of stylus replacements. So if you do ever have an accident or whatever, you can just replace the stylus rather than having to unmount and remount a cartridge. And because then you have the removable stylus, we tend to see stylus upgrades as well, as a far easier part on your analog journey there.
Excellent. Because I think, you know, we tend to talk about this technology and not actually realize that people are coming in, and sometimes we see it on the forums, they're scared to ask the question because they think it's a silly question to ask and so on. So thank you for your answer there, because I think that does help people understand the technology.
I think the only thing I'd just clarify is that Ed said it perfectly. It's the only thing that rides the record groove. So the turntable is vitally important because it has to make sure that one, it's rotating at the right speed, and two, it can transfer that signal untouched to your hi-fi system. But the cartridge is the only thing that's in the record groove. So it's where all of the expression and the sound should come from.
It's also worth pointing out that if you are of a firmly objectivist leaning on this, it's a transducer. It's like a loudspeaker in that sense. So it is, whether, you know, regardless of the correctness of its engineering approach, there's many correct ways of doing it. They do all sound different.
Yes.
In the same way that speakers generally all sound different. So yeah, you can buy them blind. If you're starting to spend a significant sum of money, that is another place where your dealer is worth their weight in gold.
Always demo. Because also, particularly with the Audifon range, it's not really about the price. It doesn't really follow that logic of the most expensive one is the best one. The most expensive one is the purest form of Audifon's interpretation of how good sound should be represented, which is through accuracy. But if you want something a bit smoother and a bit more musical, then perhaps there's a different model in the range. So don't just be driven by price and make the assumption better for you. There's that personal element.
I guess one of the interesting things here that everybody should now be catching up with and understanding is that any sound that's generated other than what's in the groove on the record is a bad thing. And this is where a lot of the engineering happens, guys, when you come to designing a turntable. It's not just a plinth with a platter that turns round and a needle. Any sound is generated by the motor, any other interference that could be happening, it's going to get picked up by that cartridge and then sent down the line, as it were. So what's the next thing that people should be considering when it comes to the turntable? It's not just the budget, it's not just if they can afford a moving coil, a moving magnet cartridge. What's the next thing that they're thinking about when it comes to the actual turntable as a whole?
I mean, my there's two things. First of all, I can do a shameless plug on Simon's behalf. And if you aren't if you aren't in a position to get your turntable up on a wall, and a lot of people aren't, and you have no interest in doing that, and you aren't looking at the solutions that are much more complicated and have suspension and so on and so forth, the level of isolation that the turntable has from the outside world is going to be absolutely critical. Going back to what you just said there, Philip, you can stop unwanted chuff getting to the actual playing surface. That's a huge advantage. In the last 10 years, Project has been on an absolute blooming mission when it comes to feet and isolation. And at any given price point, I have to be honest, their turntables keep working and keep working in a manner that I would consider to be as intended, at a point where a lot of their rivals are decidedly unhappy. I've got a gigantic Ruark radiogram. They genuinely call it a radiogram in on review at the moment. It's got a phono stage, and it's sufficiently big that you can actually put the turntable on top of it and just plug into the back of it. Now, I was using the Technics because that also has quite squidgy feet. If I was setting up in a situation like that, I'd be looking for something which had decent isolation from the outside world. You're not going to have to add any other stuff to get going. And that's going to make a very significant difference. And then the other area where noise creeps in is from that power supply and motor, and how quietly they operate together. If you look at more expensive and more ornate turntables, they've generally moved their power supply out of the turntable, and they've gone to quite extraordinary efforts to make sure that the feed it's sending to the motor is as quiet as possible, and that the motor itself is deadened or damped within its enclosure. Solutions to this exist at every single price point, up from the affordable point where we were talking about, all the way through to, you know, buy your own spaceflight style solutions. And there's different ways of doing it. You know, one of Project's key rivals, Riga, they are all about wall shelves, and they're all about isolation external to the turntable. They believe that you solve one set of problems in one area, you solve another set of problems in another area. And that's a completely legitimate approach. It's a different way of doing these things. I would say that if your budget's a bit tight, finding something which has got the ability to work quite, as long as the surface is flat, if it's able to keep itself happy and occupied, that's a definite step in the right direction.
Yeah, I think the only thing I'd add to that is location. Location's obviously the driver there, but location relevant to relative to your other equipment as well. Sometimes we'll have problems where the turntable is positioned directly next to the speaker and the speaker doesn't have enough isolation. It might be on the same surface or whatever. And so you're inviting a lot in there.
Yeah.
Stacking next to electronics is a very common requirement. But even, for example, with some of our kits, and thank you for the plug there, Ed, we just recommend little isolation feet that we have to just put under the speaker. So that can be enough to resolve it. But just thinking about the overall environment that it's going to go into and how it will be impeded otherwise.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned that, because, and Ed mentioned, I used to DJ. So one of the venues that I used to work in, the 1200s, the Technics 1200s that we used, were on bungee cords from the ceiling, large bungee cords. And then the decks hung there because the sub bass units were actually under the DJ booth. So trying to cue up a record and it's swinging around, and then never mind trying to mix it and trying to, you know, adjust your pitch control, and this thing's swinging around. So yeah, you don't have to go to those lengths, but that does show you how much isolation does matter. And again, Ed, the other thing is the motor noise and the power supply noise and so on. And I guess a lot of this, you know, we're going back into the past with turntables. We've been around a long, long, long time. Some of this then moved on to other products and isolation feet and all that kind of thing. And things started to get a little bit silly down that end of the market when you were talking about other components. And, well, I think you start getting into grey areas further down. But it's absolutely important when it comes to turntables in terms of your isolation feet, in terms of, you know, thinking about your placement of the turntable and so on. So we've got a vague idea of what we want now. So what's the next step for somebody looking at turntables, and do they start? Well, here's a good question, and it's one that I would ask myself, because I'm going to drop a bit of coin on a turntable. Do I drop that onto something that is an all-in-one box that I know is going to do the job for me? Or do I look at, well, this is a good turntable, but it also has upgrade paths that I could then follow as the years go down? You know, I get more into the hobby, my record collection gets, you know, a lot larger and so on, and I start wanting to listen a bit more. How would you say that end user, do you look at the upgrade path, or do you just buy the product that's going to suit you best there and then? Or are the two intertwined?
With turntables, they're more intertwined than almost anything else. It's very, very hard to find something that has no upgrade stretch to it at all. Not impossible, but tricky. And this feeds back. I thought I'd go in first on this. It feeds back to the podcast we did last. If you are looking at this, you're thinking, I want to buy this, I want it to be good, and realistically, it's not going to change for a significant amount of time. Buying a turntable which has an enormous amount of stretch, but potentially lower performance to start with, yes, you've got all of that extra in potential, but if you're not going to realize it, you're not. There's no sense to that whatsoever. You need to be honest with yourself about what scope and how far down this expensive rabbit hole you want to go. Once again, if you remember back a couple of years ago, I worked with Simon where I got sent a Project Record Player and basically just an extra box of things that you can attach to it. And it was a tremendously large box of things. And you could essentially all basically double the price of the turntable with just taking bits on and off it. And what's more extraordinary is that whilst that sounds like a plug, Project is unusual in so much as they make most of those bits themselves, but almost any turntable, you'd have to get your box of bits from different suppliers, but they will accept the same box of bits. It's quite hard to find something where you can't stretch it. If you are going for something at the very serious, where you've got turntables that will, you know, can be made to accept multiple different tone arms, they have different cutouts and different assemblies and things like that, it's going to cost you more. It's going to cost you more for arms that behave in that sort of fashion. And you need to be honest just how much faffing you want to do. Because I had a fascinating snippet from a dealer, and a very significant high-end dealer, who said at any price point, he sold turntables and going, people going, yeah, I will be changing the tone arm at some point. About 10% of them came back to do it when it boiled down to it.
Honestly, that's quite high by the sounds of things as well.
So turntables have got enormous stretch in them as a matter of course. And you have to be damn sure that you're going to want to go down the business of taking an arm off. I mean, fitting a new cartridge. I mean, I've done it, well, not as many times as he has, but I've done it a lot. And it's no longer something that's completely terrifying, but it's not something you undertake lightly. And changing an arm and changing stuff like that, your dealer will possibly help, but they might not, depending on where it came from. You need to be quite committed for that, Phil. So my recommendation would be work on the principle that almost everything you buy has got some upgrade potential in it, but try and maximize what you've got out of the box. Unless you genuinely think, I'm going to have a magnitude more money in a year's time, and I want to get going now and do that later on, I wouldn't get too het up, because you can lose sight of the original target, which is to sit and listen to records in an enjoyable fashion and start just plotting your next upgrade path. And that ends up being quite disenchanting.
So, Simon, one of the questions and one of the things that usually get pointed to the likes of myself and other enthusiasts on AV forums is that you listen to the equipment, not the music, or you watch the equipment and not the film that you're playing, and that kind of thing. That's usually the accusation, because we get so into this subject. Is that the case when you're looking at upgrades and that kind of thing? Are you overthinking it? Should you just be buying the best that you can afford at the time and just enjoying that experience?
I think it really is. I think it really is about who you are as a person. And so some will be able to self-identify and say, I know enough about myself to know that when I buy something, I'm going to want to tweak it. Some will know that enough for themselves. Right. Others will know about themselves exactly the opposite, but they maybe have never had a turntable before. I would say that you can, of course you can. You can obsess around everything, and you can be more het up about, should I go with the cork mat, the leather mat, or the felt mat, or the rubber mat? I don't know. And you can obsess about that all day long. But I think my recommendation to people would be read that review, read that feature that Ed wrote, because it's pretty good at saying I did this and it achieved this. And like you said, almost all reasonable turntables at this affordable end at least have the flexibility of, if not a cartridge, then a stylus change, because lots of them are working with good cartridge manufacturers out of the gates. All of them have the possibility for a mat change, and all of them have the possibility for external isolation. So putting them on and things like that. And those are three major things that you can do that mean, even if you're spending at the far lower end of the spectrum, you know, I referenced the primary E earlier. With the primary E, you can get an acrylic platter. You can get different mat upgrades. You can put it on an isolation platform. You can upgrade the stylus from the stylus 5S that's on it to a stylus 40 if you wanted about 400 quid. Like, there are all of these things that you can do, and it turns into a different turntable as you do those things. The flip side of it is, if you know you're obsessive and you're going to go on that journey, buy in at the right level for you, because I think Ed's, I'm trying to remember now, but I think Ed's summary was, it started as a £600 turntable, and this is now a £900 turntable. And it was very interesting that turntable in particular, I feel, can be a £900 turntable with upgrades. But there are others, perhaps, where you end up spending too much and then your system comes out of balance.
Yes.
So it's that same thing that we know through whatever system we're hooking up. It's as strong as its weakest point. So, you know, it might be that a £2,000 turntable cartridge can fit on a £500 turntable.
Yeah, I mean, it's important.
But it can only do what it can do.
It's important to stress, unfortunately, that we will reiterate this, everything makes a difference. If you think back to the last Christmas review I did with the Riga Naya and the Planar 10, the two things look physically identical, and one of them still costs twice as much as the other one and kills and eats it. So, and you think, oh, okay, well, I'll just put the expensive cartridge on the cheaper one, and that will make the difference. And it doesn't. Yeah. So unfortunately, everything does make a difference. And part of successful, happy turntable usership is understanding and being at peace with that. And also, as Simon says, just pitching, just knowing yourself and knowing how best to actually spend that money. And this, going back to where we went, started this podcast, is where trained and experienced dealers come in. There's plenty of decent advice on the forums. There's plenty of decent advice on other forums. There's plenty of decent advice on YouTube and all sorts of other places. But to reiterate, two well-designed turntables can sound radically different. And you will need to work out where you sit in that. Because, I mean, you're a Technics person, aren't you, Phil? When it boils down to it, your happy pace That's what you used.
Yeah, that's what I grew up with. That's the sound I'm used to. That's what... And don't get me wrong, I appreciate hi-fi in all its forms. And there's some systems I've listened to and I've gone, wow. Because it's so far removed from my comfort zone, but still sounds incredible. So yeah, I mean, it's what sounds good to you, isn't it? That's always the advice I would give somebody. It's what sounds good to you.
Yeah,
you
know? I mean, I'm resigned to a fact at some point I will have had just enough to drink that I will buy my fourth LP12 in a fit of drunken idiocy on eBay. It's not an if, it's a when, but you know, I'm fighting that for now, so we're doing okay. So
okay, well, to wrap this up, because we need to wrap this up now, because we could go on all day, but I think we've covered all the points that we had in our bullet points, really, to cover in terms of turntables. But if there's something that we haven't covered that you want to know about, then do send a question in. Either do it on YouTube in the comments below, or go to avforums.com, go to the forum list, all the way down the bottom, you'll find AV Forums podcast. Find this podcast and put your question in there, and we'll answer that on the next Hi-Fi podcast, because I think it is an area of interest. It's certainly the longest running area of hi-fi other than speakers. So, you know, there's a wealth of information out there. There's a wealth of engineering that's gone on over decades and decades and decades. And you know, there's lots of good advice. So if you've got any questions, get them in. We'll try and answer them for you. But before we leave today, we've talked about the kit, as always. But what are we going to listen to on our turntables now? Normally we do Ed's album playlist and vinyl of the week. We're not going to do that this week. We've got two fine guests here. who know their turntables, who know their hi-fi. So Simon, I'm going to come to you first. What's the first three LPs that you're pulling out of your box to listen to?
Oh my goodness. It changes with the time, definitely. But I think the things that I'll always go back to are, I like pieces that you can really feel the space around them. And Nils Frahm Spaces would be one that I always go to. I am a owner of the Ryan Adams Live from Carnegie Hall 2-night box set. Thank you, Ed. That's the one. And the third one is it's actually a release from a company called Mondo, who I love the records that they put out, and they do they did a special release for the Last of Us 2 game, and it was have you heard that, Ed?
I'm aware of the soundtrack. Phil, if you wanted a tie-in for Mondo, remember when I did that Fight Club test video the one that you had to tear in the middle? That was another Mondo release.
Yeah, that's Mondo. And they do some wonderful pressings. They really do. But they have this Last of Us 2 EP, and it has covers, acoustic covers that feature in the game on vinyl. But it's a very good test record. I have it here.
Marvellous. I'll have to have a look at that.
So same question to you then, Ed. What three are you pulling out for our new turntable owner to listen to?
I suppose, actually, do you know what? There are, I'm going to, first turntable owner, first of all, it's a cliche, but it's the best of a cliche. And also it can be, you know, going back to the expensive vinyl, you do not need to buy a repressing of this, for goodness sake. Go on to Discogs, go and search by country and pounds and buy the original Dire Straits album, the one titled Dire Straits. Now, Dire Straits have become an audiophile cliche, and we've heard Private Investigations and Money for Nothing and all the rest of it far too many times for our own good. But the first album, when we're honest with ourselves, is still actually really, really, really good. It's an astonishingly good recording. The first, the original set of pressings are all top-notch. So long as you've got one that hasn't been stored underwater, it will delight. That was how that album was recorded. It was how it's supposed to be listened to. You can tap into something which is genuinely, genuinely exciting for not a huge amount of money. And that would be one of my choices. The second, I'm obligated, and in terms of, Simon was just talking about test pressings, I have two copies of Every Day by the Cinematic Orchestra, and I must have referenced it in a good 40% of the reviews I've ever written for AV Forums. I must have listened to Burnout, it's got to be 5,000 times now, and I still love the track. Still astonishing to listen to. You can pick that up from the Ninja Tune website for, again, in the standards of modern vinyl, not that much money. And then the third one is an open point. I mean, going back to what Simon says, it's about finding an artist that you resonate with and luxuriating in an intensely personal way of listening to that. So there's a various candidates for that. I'm going to reach for one I can actually get to quite easily, which is one of the most underrated albums of the 1980s. This is Strange Times by the Chameleons. Finding one of these, it has been repressed, but it was repressed and they about 80 copies. It's not the easiest thing in the world to do. This is not, I mean, you should listen to this. It's a great album. But this is about, every now and again, you will be looking on Discogs and you will see an album that you love, and it's going to cost quite a lot of money. And you need to decide if you're up to date on your bills, there's any looming expenses. But if you've got it, there is no more glorious way of luxuriating in something you love. So in my case, it's that Chameleons album or The Color of Spring by Talk Talk or things like that. But it's something that you love. If it exists on vinyl and you think, it's more expensive than my, you know, it's costing more, it's 4 months of Tidal subscription for one record. If you love the album enough and you're invested in it, go for it. That's it. There's no, it's already obsolete. It's not going to get more obsolete. Unless you have a house fire or, you know, other catastrophic events, it ain't going anywhere. Enjoy it. Immerse yourself in it. So those are the recommendations as far as they go.
Excellent. Okay, well, thank you, Simon. Thank you for coming along on the podcast this week.
Thanks for inviting.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks.
Pleasure having you. Ed, as always, thank you very much. And that's it for the Hi-Fi edition. The next episode of the AV Forums podcast is the TV edition, where we'll be talking a lot about TVs, which will upset whoever commented earlier on in the podcast. That's on the 8th of April. And the Home AV edition is on Monday, the 15th of April. And then the movies editions will follow at the end of the month. And we also have our first gaming podcast of the year at the end of April. So stay tuned for that one. Ian and the gang will be coming along and talking all about games. And all of those podcasts are available from 7 p.m. on the AV Forums podcast YouTube channel. So that's not the main AV Forums channel. That's the AV Forums podcast channel. Go and subscribe to that so you don't miss any of the videos. And of course, the podcast is also available through audio-only providers like Spotify and so on. So go and search it out. And like I say, every Monday this year, you'll get a podcast of some description. If you've enjoyed the podcast, of course, you can subscribe, you can like it, you can do all the cliched social media stuff. And of course, you can also buy me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/AV Forums. I'm Phil Hinton. Thank you for watching and listening, and we'll see you again soon. Goodbye.